This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman.
Expecto Patronum.
They can be a great people, Kal-El. They wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all, their capacity for good, I have sent them you, my only son.
Everybody, you are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvin. And today on, we have a pretty special lineup this week, I think. So we are going to be reviewing Justice League Snyder Cut tomorrow. And then on Thursday, our Supercut is going to be dedicated to DC. So today for Throwback Tuesday, we are taking it all the way back to 1978 and the first time that we see the Man of Steel on screen. And that is with Superman and Christopher Reeve.
I don't think you can overstate what a big deal this movie is, right? Because not only is it the first time we see Superman on screen, it's actually the first proper superhero film on screen. Mm. And, you know, Batman only appeared in the early 90s. So I think doing a revisit now in today's context, when 40 over years later, we still haven't really got a great Superman, is really special, because for me, it'll always be Christopher Reeve.
I think for me, that was one of the craziest things about this movie, like watching it again. It essentially took them 22 years to start the superhero comic book genre boom with X-Men in 2000. And I'm not sure why that is, or why it took them that long, or maybe there were just way too many Superman movies coming out one after another. But like you said, it took a long time for Tim Burton to get on the bandwagon, and then he made Batman in 1989. With the kind of success that it had, because it was like a massive blockbuster success, if it was made today, you would have at least 10 copycat movies like that in the next 2 years.
Okay, I have a bunch of things to say, but first of all, just the story is pretty simple. It is the origin story of Superman. It includes the destruction of Krypton, the fact that his father and mother essentially sent him off the planet to save him. He crash landed onto Earth, essentially, and was taken in by the Kents, and, you know, and then eventually all the way up to him working as a reporter, meeting Lois Lane, and also running into Lex Luthor, who I've decided I'm going to say it that way, because I grew up saying Luther, but Luthor sounds a lot more ominous. But I think part of the reason why this movie was not really replicated lies in its very troubled production. And it's interesting because we are going to talk about Snyder Cut tomorrow, and Justice League also had a very troubled production. Most superhero movies, I think, have their fair share of turmoil. And this being the first, it's almost like it was the prototype for difficulty, because they struggled with the script. Mario Puzo, I believe, submitted like a 500-page script, which is par for the course. And then they took forever to land on Christopher Reeve, to find their Superman. And I think it's probably these sorts of things, along with Marlon Brando suing them, that led to it, you know, that's that big gap between superhero films.
That, and the fact that, be it as it may, superhero films took a long time to get any sort of respectable recognition. I mean, Superman is a classic, but it's very much a fan classic, right? It's targeted at comic book readers. It's a blockbuster. It's an action film. It's not really... and even now, I mean, look at when Dark Knight got nominated for the Oscars, or Black Panther. It's still mentioned or discussed as an anomaly, because it's not viewed as serious cinema. And I think that's that's unfortunate because when you rewatch something like Superman, there's so much there in terms of acting and storytelling and how great films could be made. But on that troubled production part, and much like the Snyder Cut, which we will talk about tomorrow, this film has multiple versions as well, right? And so there's the extended cut, which was released later, which is 3 hours long. And frankly, not the version to catch. Because,
not necessary.
Yeah. The original theatrical cut, though, is quite perfect because it has just enough Superman-ness to make you have all the feels without the unnecessary weird detours into places you don't need to see.
If you go to the Superman IMDb page and you look under like alternate versions, it lists 24 different alternate versions. So I think there are 24 different cuts of the film that was released on either like streaming or on TV or, you know, just throughout the years, right? Just snipped and put together for different platforms. You know what is so cool, though, that by the time this movie came out, Superman already had a 40-year legacy. So it's not like this movie came out and made Superman famous. It's like he had so much myth and legend behind him that this movie could afford to make jokes like, oh, he can't change in the phone booth anymore because it's 1978, phone booths are modern now. You know what I mean? They could afford to make those jokes, which is kind of... I'm just thinking, like, those are the kinds of jokes that you make now after superhero movies have like 20 years behind them. It's ridiculous that they were able to re-famous a character that was already so famous to begin with.
And I think they managed to do that partly because they got the perfect Superman and the perfect Clark Kent. And so much of the film and its power really rests in Christopher Reeve's performance and physicality, because you know, obviously you can make the joke, the phone booth joke was delightful, but I think the eternal joke of Superman is the glasses. It's ridiculous, like, and you need an actor, especially if you're going to be watching it on screen, right? You need somebody who can convincingly be two different people just with a change of clothes and a pair of glasses. And there is a scene in which he essentially does that, right? Where he emerges as Superman, disappears, and then reappears in less than 30 seconds, I think. And he's essentially a completely different person. Lois Lane has just seen them both and she doesn't see it. And as a viewer, you think, no, I see why you don't. And I think that without that push and pull, without the cuteness and kind of innocence of Clark and the perfection that is Superman, it's really hard to get a handle on the movie.
Oof, I got goosebumps hearing you talk about that scene because I love that scene. I sometimes rewatch it on YouTube just because I miss watching Christopher Reeve. I'm a big fan, clearly, but he makes you believe why people would believe they were two different people. He also makes you warm up to Clark so much that Superman isn't lame or a do-gooder. He's someone with a good heart. And that's something that subsequent movies have constantly missed the mark on, right? It's like they don't get that for you to love Superman, you have to understand and love Clark. And Christopher Reeve, I think, got that. He's essentially playing Clark Kent, and then Clark Kent being Superman. And there's something very special about that performance. He also famously sort of lost his love for the role by the third film. And you can sometimes see some of that sort of fading away as the movies go on. But Superman 1 and 2, stellar in terms of what he brings to the role. And I still think that that's why he's the gold standard that everyone measures an on-screen Superman to.
You said believe, right? So speaking of stuff we believe, you know how we do these old movies and then we always say that the effects were ahead of their time. You know, they did all these like special effects that were so advanced. Not the case for this movie at all. Like, this movie did not age well effects-wise. It's some of the jankiest things I've ever seen, like, in film. And you know on the poster how it says, you'll believe a man can fly? That's more of like an instruction than an actual tagline. It's like, no, you'll believe a man can fly.
Believe it now.
We have no way of showing you any of this.
But also, that's that stellar acting I'm talking about. Yeah. Christopher Reeve's just like selling it.
Actually, you know, I think about this in the context of things like Harry Potter, where you have to believe that someone is waving around a wand and that something is happening. And they talk about the believability of that. And I think that Christopher Reeve makes you believe he can fly. Like, I don't believe Superman can fly per se, but I think about the pressure of Chris Evans and the shield. I think about the pressure of the shapes that you know these people are supposed to be in, not physical shape, but the shapes that they pull in preparation for their roles, you know, as we've seen them for years and years in figurines and comic books. And Christopher Reeve's flying shape is perfect.
I completely agree. And, you know, one of my favorite scenes in the film is when he first takes Lois Lane for a flight. And janky effects aside, the fact that nobody could hold their shape that way when they're flying, yep. Gravity exists, all of that being the case, it's magical. It's magical because both those actors, Margot Kidder as well, who's just great as Lois Lane.
She is.
That chemistry, the looks on their faces, it's a perfect scene.
Also because of John Williams' score.
Oh,
like,
yes.
I think if John, like, literally, not to sound like corny or whatever, but literally John Williams helped them fly. And you, like, again, quote unquote, believe because of the kind of music that he put in. It's so sweeping and it's so, like, beautiful. And he does so much to add to the movie. And it's not like, in a way, it's not like any of the other scores that he has put out. It's so unique specifically for Superman.
And I mean, that's a Superman theme that we still think of, right?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
I wanted to say before we close off on this side that Teenage Superman, there's a stunt that he does where he's running by a train. And it's when I read later on that Jeff East, who plays Teenage Clark Kent, had injured himself doing that stunt, I felt so awful for him because, again, watching it with a 2020 eye, you won't even believe this man can run, never mind fly. And so I just feel so bad that they injured or he got injured doing that. But yeah, I think we fly the flag for practical effects very often here on Popcorn mm-hmm. Culture, but in this instance, a bit hard to argue. So we're talking today about 1978's Superman, the first time that Superman or a superhero really was seen on the silver screen. We want to know if you have any memories of it. Is Christopher Reeve still your favorite Superman? If not, who? You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Building fit Malaysians, BFM 89.9.
Why are you?
I'm sorry?
I mean, why are you here? There must be a reason for you to be here.
Yes, I'm here to fight for truth and justice in the American way.
You're going to end up fighting every elected official in this country.
I'm sure you don't really mean that, Lois.
I don't believe this.
Lois?
Hmm?
I never lie.
Just how fast do you fly, by the way?
Oh, I don't know, really. No, never actually, bothered to time myself.
No?
Say, why don't we find out?
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn Sharmila and Arvin. Today, we are throwing it back to Superman, 1978, the first time we saw Christopher Reeve in the suit. Before we go too far down this path, because there is a path I definitely want to walk, I did want to say that Lois Lane is perfect. I think that to this day, she is one of the best versions of a love interest on screen for a superhero because she's spunky. You very much believe she's her own person and it's not shoved down your throat. You just believe she's a person.
I still think we've not gotten a Lois Lane, Margot Kidder playing Lois Lane level of superhero love interest 40 years down the line. And I don't know if we will, because that's a case of her personality really taking control of a role that otherwise perhaps could have been fairly lackluster. But I also think that it's written that way too. For a movie that was made in 1978, she's actually written so progressively and I love watching her on screen.
Lois Lane and like you mentioned, even Clark Kent, like as a character, I think both of them are like genre killers. I think both of them make it so difficult for people to cast them again. Like even if it's someone as powerful as Amy Adams, who's a really good actor, cannot capture that Lois Lane-ness again.
How do we feel about Gene Hackman and Marlon Brando?
Love him.
I love them. I mean, yeah, I actually love the casting of everyone in this film.
They really know what they're doing.
camp central, yeah. So entertaining. I love it.
I love Gene Hackman. I didn't expect him to be that funny. I haven't seen this movie in about 25 years, at least. The last time I saw it was when I was a kid. So I completely forgot about, you know, how comedic Lex Luthor was in this movie.
Luthor
was in this movie. But Marlon Brando is just like chewing scenery. He's just, you know, he's doing this with like both eyes closed. I'm pretty sure he's not reading any script. He just went into this like, what's it about? Outer space thing, planet gets destroyed. Okay, I've got it. And then he's there doing like holographic dialogue or whatever. So he's
in a shiny lit up suit. I don't know. It's
just,
a lot.
Just wearing like aluminium foil and like iron on badges. The S isn't even consistent. Like at one point he has a t-shirt. Another point he looks like he ironed it on his vest or whatever. It's so cutely bad, the effects in this film.
Yeah, I do. The entire Krypton is clearly styrofoam, like it's visibly styrofoam. And to think that, yeah, so I, you know, we say this sometimes about Star Wars as well, because again, these are characters that we continue to see, that we've seen the effects specifically evolve over 40 years for. And so when you go back 40 years and you watch something like Superman and like the version of Krypton, and for that matter, the version of the Fortress of Solitude that shows up in the movie, it's really great. Everything is clearly styrofoam and plexiglass, and you know, it's very charming. Okay, so how do we feel about Christopher Walken maybe becoming Superman, or maybe having been Superman? How do we feel about Sylvester Stallone? Let's run through the alternate realities. I'm really excited to do this.
Are we doing Nick Cage as well?
I think we should, because he, you know, because like crazy face Nicolas Cage. But there were so many people that they ran through to become Clark Kent. And when you read the list of people that they considered, Christopher Walken jumped out at me, just because imagine, you know, the irregular delivery that you could have of Clark Kent. But there's so many alternate realities in which this movie was so much weirder.
I feel like Christopher Walken is one of the weirder ones, because I can imagine him being Lex Luthor, but not necessarily Superman. So I'm just like, how did that happen? Who was thinking about this film?
I can imagine Christopher Walken being Jor-El. But you know how Jor-El takes like 12 years to teach him what he needs to know about the history of mankind? That would just be Christopher Walken's like two sentences. And then he just gets older before he finishes that paragraph. So I can picture him doing that. But Nicolas Cage, I honestly would have wanted to see as Superman, just Same. Because it had Tim Burton in it. And if you've seen the pictures that came out online and stuff of him in the suit, it looks weird enough for me to want to see like a feature length film with him as Clark Kent / Kal-El / Superman.
I think that there is a certain degree of respect that you have for the character, but sometimes when you go into reverence, it gets tricky, right? And Nicolas Cage famously loves Superman. Like, it's really very much his thing. And Christopher Reeve, on the other hand, was excited to do it, but I don't think he wasn't someone who was a massive Superman fan from before. He likes the character. He understood, I think, the prominence and the heft of what he was doing. And that's why his performance has that much thought, I think, put into it, but he didn't necessarily approach it with the kind of shaking voice reverence that we saw for example, Andrew Garfield and Spider-Man. Mm.
Yes, and I think that's important. He's also a theater-trained actor. But I think the other thing that I was reminded of when I watched this film again now is how it totally embraces its comic book roots.
Yeah.
It's not trying to be... So if you look at Jesse Eisenberg in Man of Steel, or Man of Steel in itself, versus this Superman, Gene Hackman is Gene Hackman because they want a comic book villain. And even all of these things that we've been laughing about, it doesn't matter, because it kind of feeds into a certain comic booky sensibility. Mm. And you've got to have that sensibility to take Superman seriously. When you try with too much reverence, and when you try to make it gritty or dark or deep, it just starts feeling like you're sort of, I don't know, it feels overwrought in a way that doesn't serve the storyline, I think.
Lex Luthor has pet jaguars or whatever it is that
what
he feels.
Are they? They never tell
no
you.
Budget, guys. No, they weren't going to show us.
Is it a T-Rex down there? Because that's what it seems like.
Crocodiles or like mutant animals. Who knows what he's up to, right? And no, you mentioned the comic book roots and stuff. Without spoiling anything, the ending of this film is some of the weirdest, most insane comic book stuff that anyone has ever seen. And it's weird because this started the whole craze, right? Like almost like 40 something years ago. And it's taken us 40 something years to work our way back up to resolutions like that. You know, we had to like introduce the grounded, dark and gritty, and then slowly go to like cosmic stuff and then bring in all these concepts. When they just did it in like the first movie, and people loved it, and they embraced it and went like, yeah, I guess that's how, you know, it checks out, that the logic works. And no one questioned it. It became like a huge box office success, which I love, which I honestly love. But it's so crazy that even comic books don't do that anymore.
Mm. Also, to reemphasize, please watch the theatrical cut, because yes. And I bring this up again because part of the troubled production, aside from almost all of it, like every element, they had problems landing the script, they had problems landing the cast. Some of Superman became Superman 2, some of Superman 2 became Superman. And so I think because they had that bulk and that variety of content, that's why when you watch the extended version, you find yourself a bit lost in certain thickets where you're like, I'm not sure why the movie came here. And so for a sort of lean, mean blockbuster, I think the theatrical version is still the one that you want to watch. And you're going to get all these things that we're talking about, the origin story, the schlocky performances, the really, really fine performances, and that comic book resolution. But otherwise, you find yourself in sort of, it's not even art house, it's just extended.
I would do a 4-hour cut if it had more Superman in it. Like, honestly, the my biggest problem with the 3-hour cut was that, like you said, there's not enough Superman. So if there were more, there was more footage of him and Lois Lane, then I wouldn't mind. Like, I do like a 4-hour cut easily.
You know that scene where he's just going around saving random people after his introduction?
Like those, the animated shots?
Those,
yeah.
I was totally fine with. I'm just like, yep, saving kids, saving people in cars, whatever. I'm happy to watch this.
Well, you know, if you want a 4-hour cut of a movie, have I got a recommendation for you. Tomorrow we are going to be reviewing Justice League, the Snyder Cut, the Zack Snyder version. But for today, we've been talking about Superman in 1978, played by Christopher Reeve, directed by Richard Donner. We want to know, do you have fond memories of this film? Have you rewatched it? Is Christopher Reeve your Superman? WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Write to us at movies@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.